We're moving now to agenda paper six.
So are you going to agree as quickly as you did with the other papers? I hope so. So the main purpose of agenda paper six is to present to you a draft of the tentative agenda decision about the accounting for reverse acquisition transactions in which the accounting inquiry is not a business. This paper also addressed some further concerns that were raised by the Korean Accounting Standards Board, the CASB, and in this paper we have addressed these concerns and they are fully described in this paper. Just to make some remarks of the important points in this paper is that our view is that the accounting acquirer does not incur any transaction costs to obtain its listing, and transaction costs are only incurred by the legal parent. So we therefore reaffirm our conclusion in this paper that the excess identified between the consideration transferred and received should be fully recognized as an expense. And also, well, in our tentative agenda decision, we recommend the Interpretations Committee that they should reaffirm their conclusion that the non-listed entity is receiving a service from the SPAC to obtain a public listing status, and that the entity, in order to account for this transaction, will need to develop an accounting policy based on IFRS 2. And also by applying, by analogy, the guidance in IFRS 3. So the tentative agenda decision is in Appendix A of this paper, and we are asking whether you agree with our analysis and the conclusions reached in this paper.
Okay, so any comments on the paper proposals? Don't.
I agree with the staff recommendation. However, I have a little bit of a due process issue with taking into account comment letters that have been received before actually issuing an agenda decision, and particularly if we take into account only one of these comment letters and give this prominent status, because there are other constituents out there who obviously wanted to think about the issue, and September meeting is not that far back. So I'm a little bit worried that we take too much emphasis on this particular comment letter, and that might encourage others to do the same. So while I agree with the recommendation, I think this should be taken with caution, the prominent status of the KASB comment letter.
I would just note that they were the submitter, and so there is, I think, a distinction there to be drawn. And certainly hear your comments. I suppose the other thing I would note is that it's not going to take away the opportunity for others to comment when we finalise this issue, whether it's through an agenda decision or through some other proposal. There will be an opportunity for all to be able to comment. But noted. Scott, had you next.
There is a comment in paragraph 64 that seems to drive some of the conclusion that says, in our view, the main purpose of the merger transaction is for the accounting acquirer to obtain a public listing. And I guess that would be as opposed to raising capital. I've certainly seen plenty of transactions where it's clear the main purpose is to obtain a public listing, but I've also seen some of these where the main purpose is to raise capital. And it just so happened that this was a cheaper way to do it than doing an IPO. And I don't want to base our answer on a conclusion about purpose that I don't think holds true for every transaction, because I think that will weaken our conclusion. So I guess my question is, if it were not true that the main purpose was to obtain a public listing, that that was just an outgrowth of it happened to be the cheapest way to raise capital, do we have a different answer?
Scott, can I ask you first, in that experience that you've seen where there has been an objective to raise capital, how have they gone about and done that? Has that been because of capital cash sitting in the entity that they've reversed into?
That's right. The SPAC happens to have, you know, $100 million in it. You know, a lot of times the way that those particular SPACs get formed, there's two ways. Number one, the SPAC used to be an operating company. They sold everything off, and instead of distributing the cash, left it in the entity to see if a transaction like this would materialize that would provide a better return for the owners of the SPAC than just distributing the cash. And then the other case is I've seen situations where SPACs go out and raise money and, you know, actually then market themselves to their potential merger partners as you can raise capital and go public by merging with us. And, you know, the money that's in there is a big part of the transaction. So I have to say, even in that case, I have no problem with the answer. But if our answer is based on, you know, the purpose is to obtain the listing, there's companies that are going to push back and say that was not the purpose. That was not the main purpose of our listing. We wanted to raise capital. This turned out to be the cheapest way.
Well, I think that even I think that in the case that you're describing, the SPAC is the one incurring those transaction costs. I mean, that analysis we include in the paper. More than it was a capital transaction or not, the effect at the end is that how come you can split that excess into further transaction costs so that you can recognize them within equity if those transaction costs were not recognized by the accounting acquirer? And I think from the perspective of accounting acquirer, it's not a capital transaction.
Well, it is a capital transaction because they issued shares and got cash.
Yeah, I think it is, but you cannot support it. From an accounting perspective, you cannot support the recognition in equity, I think.
That's okay with me. If that's what our conclusion is, I'm certainly not going to object to that. I just want to make sure we're not basing the conclusion on an assumption about the main purpose of all these transactions that we'll wind up not holding in some.
Certainly the circumstance you described of the SPAC holding a significant amount of cash was a scenario that we discussed when the paper was being put together. So okay. It was something that we had in mind.
Okay.
Andrew? I was fine with the paper. I just had some drafting suggestions on the tentative agenda decision, particularly around the second sentence in the first paragraph, which says IFRS 3 does not provide guidance for reverse acquisitions. I mean, that could be read as these things being within the scope of IFRS 3, there just not being any guidance. I would have think I'd preferred a simple statement that such transactions are not business combinations and therefore not within the scope of IFRS 3. And I think if you did that, it could simplify some of the drafting later on in the agenda decision.
Point taken. Guido?
I was struggling maybe from a different point of view with the same issue that Scott had, because Scott just said, well, the legal acquirer in our case issues shares, which is not the case. It's deemed to have issued shares. Who really issued shares was the other one. So that brought me, well, I agree that it's not a capital transaction from that point of view. On the other hand, I would then also have to challenge the view that it's IFRS 2. Because, I mean, in our wording, we say the accounting acquirer is deemed to have issued shares, and that's why we apply IFRS 2. That's the hurdle you have to jump over to come to IFRS 2. So you apply a lot of analogies here and interpretation, and that's in a tentative agenda decision. So that, You could have also come up with, well, why don't you apply IFRS 3 in analogy? You say, well, I'm not acquiring a business, I'm acquiring a bunch of assets, so I'm in IFRS 3 2B, and you may come up with a different solution there. So people might challenge us to apply IFRS 2, which I agree with. I think it makes sense to do it, but it's not directly IFRS 2 because the legal acquiree is not issuing shares. It's just we are applying IFRS 3 in analogy and saying, well, you know, if you have a reverse acquisition, the legal acquiree is deemed to issue shares, and then that's how we calculate the acquisition cost and so on and so on. And then we apply this logic to IFRS 2. I agree that that's one way to look at it. You may also look at it by the legal acquiree acquiring a group of assets, because the legal acquirer is not a business in our example. And then you would come to, as I said, to IFRS 3 2B, and you would allocate the whole consideration, the fair value of the consideration, to the assets acquired based on their relative fair values. I don't think that's the right answer, but I agree with the outcome, with the result, but I can imagine that a lot of people will challenge that, especially because it's only a gender decision. It's not mandatory. So I could still see that in practice people will come up with other solutions that might also be have a basis in the standards. So I agree. Again, I agree with the best thing to do it is, as you said here, but I don't think it will help us with the diversity in practice on these issues.
So are you suggesting we should step it up?
That might be one of the solutions. If you want to avoid diversity in practice, I think we should.
Then it would be an interpretation.
Yes.
Laurent?
Yeah, in response to Guido's comments about whether you or not you are in the scope of IFRS 2, I note, though, that it's a transaction where shares are exchanged on each side, isn't it? When you read the second paragraph. In achieving this, the listed non-operating entity acquires the entire share capital of the non-listed operating entity by issuing new shares in exchange for the shares of the non-listing operating entity. So, can't you consider that there is a shared transaction, share-based transaction, for a service?
Yes.
Well, that's what I said. Well, I think that's what we said. That's why it's a share-based payment transaction.
And so coming to Guido's point, so
there is one entity issuing shares in order to obtain and acquire the shares of the other entity. But because of the way in which control changes, we are saying we should reflect it in the financial reporting from the opposite way around. So it's the one whose shares are being acquired that should be reflected as the acquirer in this case. So hence, I think Guido's question about, well, people might challenge the accounting because the accounting acquirer is not the one who's issuing shares to obtain something. It's being deemed to issue shares to obtain something.
Yeah, we've followed the IFRS 2 route, but I think we've always acknowledged that it's not the only paths people might take. John?
I mean, I agree with the staff analysis, but I do share some of Guido's concerns. I think it's not, you know, whether an agenda rejection notice is sufficient to actually require that accounting, because I think there is a question about the interaction between IFRS 3 and IFRS 2, and when you analyze it, I agree with the conclusion. I think it's the appropriate conclusion, but I think it might need more than just a rejection statement to make that the practice.
Andrew?
I don't really have a problem with the IFRS 2 answer looking at the substance of what's going on. I'd be a bit nervous just to suddenly launch into an interpretation. I mean, why don't we issue the agenda decision and see what, if any, comments we get?
Sandy, did you want to come in on this?
Yeah, I guess while I understood the accounting, the analysis, I found that I struggled a bit to understand the economics of the example. Like, I didn't feel as though I had a good understanding of what actually happened in this particular transaction. In the sense of, the notion was at the beginning, okay, it's to get, obtain a listing, but did they raise capital? And then this notion of somehow that after the transaction, the shares substantially appreciated. But I wasn't clear if, in fact, they were more widely held. And in fact, I mean, if this transaction happened and they were held by the same people, the notion that the submitter said that, well, they just appreciated significantly was confusing to me. So I felt a bit burdened by not understanding the economics. Well, I understood the mechanics. I didn't understand the economics of what was going on in this particular transaction. So I myself struggled to say whether I agreed or disagreed, because I felt like I didn't have a comprehensive understanding of the economics and enough to understand whether I thought they were important enough for me to think about something differently. So I guess I don't have a conclusion. I had more questions.
I think, let me take a stab at it, Denise, and then you correct me when I get it wrong. The example, the company C in the Korean submission, was one of those, let's say, that was described by Scott, that for one reason or another had a whole bunch of cash, but was otherwise a non-operating entity. It was widely held in the market. It made the announcement that it was pursuing a particular acquisition, and that caused the share price to significantly appreciate. And when they actually did the transaction, which would be the grant date, their stock had significantly appreciated, and therefore there was a significant excess debit in the accounting. And the thing that troubled the Koreans, and that understandably so, is, well, if that debit only has one place to go, and that's net income, how are we going to explain that to people? Have I got it right, Denise?
Yes.
So this was a case, the Company C case in the Korean submission was a widely held entity.
So the SPAC, had cash and was widely held beforehand.
Right.
And they went out and said, I'm going to buy something. And so the market anticipated what that acquisition was and fair valued those assets of what was being acquired?
Well, I'm not sure it fair valued the assets, but it certainly, according to the response we got from the KASB, it fair valued the shares of the SPAC.
Now, under IFRS 2, you don't really need to explain that difference that exists, because that's just an unidentifiable service or good that you receive. If you are under IFRS 3, then you would say, oh, that's goodwill.
Yep.
If you are under IFRS 32, you would say, oh, that's a transaction cost. So, I agree with Scott that maybe in this case we don't really need to say what was the purpose of it. There's just an excess that results out from the valuation that is implicit therein. Well, that is that results from applying IFRS 3 and IFRS 2 altogether.
Others? I have to say I'm ambivalent on how we go on this one. I, too, am concerned that an agenda rejection may not compel a change in practice, and people say, well, that's fine, and drive on in their own direction. On the other hand, I'm not eager to just start doing interpretations willy-nilly, and I share Andrew's reservation. So let me ask this question. If we expose this as an agenda decision, Michael, do we have the ability to somehow ask the question? And instead of being an agenda decision, should the committee pursue this as an interpretation?
We've not done it before, but I don't see there's anything to stop us from doing that.
Well, we ought to direct people's attention to the uncertainty.
So we could certainly publish the agenda tentative agenda decision and include in our request for comments for people to additionally comment on the question about whether pursuing this in another form would be preferable, i.e. through an interpretation.
Guido?
Maybe you could be more specific. I think we have two issues here. One is, do you think with this agenda decision that the practice will apply IFRS 2? I think that's one thing we were struggling with. We all, well, the majority said we think IFRS 2 is the right answer to that. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, I think what Scott has said, and I think we should ask the question, do you agree with our view that it's a service and it should be expensed, so the difference should be expensed? Because people could always, because IFRS 2 says in the recognition part, recognize all goods or services received or services rendered. And there might be people out there that say, well, it's not a service that I've gotten, and they might come up in certain situations with good arguments saying it was an asset that I have acquired. As Scott has pointed out.
They have acquired cash.
Well, cash is, yeah. That's not, well, right. All right.
That's a good.
But should the difference to the fair value of the cash always go to P&L? Depends really on the facts and circumstances, and IFRS 2 doesn't tell you always, well, I think IFRS 2 tells you you should check whether there is an asset that could be recognized, and if so, then recognize it. If there is no asset, then it's a service.
And just look at the options that you have. You have expense, you have equity, you have goodwill. So
no, there might also be an intangible asset there.
Well,
I'm not an expert in this transaction. So I have to say they take place probably in the U.S. and other places of the world. I'm just saying, can we be so decisive to say it's an expense? I agree with you on the capital transaction issue, though. So I've seen the arguments in your paper against charging that to equity. I would agree with that, but that's only one of the options. It's not either equity or expense. There might be other. And it's not goodwill because it's not a business.
But I thought that the last meeting you concluded it was not an asset. An intangible asset.
Well, maybe in this specific, then we have to be very specific in our wording and say, you know, here's the transaction, and for this specific transaction, it's expense. But from the wording, it seems that whenever you have this kind of transactions, it is expense. And as I said, I'm not an expert in that, but I could imagine that there are transactions out there where you could recognize an asset, not goodwill.
Yeah. Andrew, then Scott, then John.
Well, I guess I'm just really nervous about here's our agenda decision, but then sort of asking lots of questions around it. I mean, I don't particularly regard it as a brave agenda decision. I thought, as Denise said, that we'd agreed last time it was an expense. I think, and we have issued what you call brave agenda decisions before, I think you should just get on and do it and see what happens.
Can I ask a question? Sure. So, just checking with you, are you satisfied with this level of detail on the tentative agenda decision, or would you like us to have more detail, like step by step, what happens with the transaction?
Scott, then John, then Bern.
I was happy with the detail in the agenda decision. I thought it was fine. I agree with you, Denise. We did decide last time that there is no intangible asset because the possible intangible asset is public listing. And I think we all decided that that is not a recognizable intangible. So, I think the question here is expense versus deduction from equity. And we've concluded on expense, and I thought the tentative agenda decision would do the trick. I guess I didn't have in my head that some entities might decide to ignore the tentative agenda decision. I guess that's theoretically possible, but maybe we could go out there doing it as a tentative agenda decision, assuming that people will try to take the advice that we've given them, and if it turns out they don't, then maybe later on we need to do something more.
John?
Just on the point of the, I think the agenda decision does reference any difference in the fair value of the shares deemed to have been issued and the fair value of the acquirees identified in net assets represents a service received by the accounting acquirer. Whether it's necessary to then go on and talk about where that ends up may be the question. I mean, we've clearly acknowledged that IFRS 2 applies, and I don't know that we need to say whether it ends up as an expense in the income statement or whether there might be an asset to be recognized. My own view is it would be an expense in the income statement, but that's just the application of IFRS 2. So what does the agenda rejection decision really need to state that? I'm in favor of issuing it, and get the comments will come back if people believe it needs to be something further, and it might need, I have heard some comments that people feel it might need transitional type requirements because of people who have applied different accounting previously. So, but we can put the tentative decision out there, and we'll receive comments if people believe there needs to be something further.
Mm-hmm. Bert, and then Laurence.
About the agenda decision. First of all, usually we give, when we say we don't add the issue to the agenda, we give a reason based on our criteria. I don't see this in this agenda decision. I don't see any of our criteria stated that are not met. Maybe I missed it, but I don't see that there's the statement of that we don't expect diversity in practice or other of our criteria, so maybe we should add that. I think it's a lengthy agenda decision, and we always had the issue of should agenda decisions be rather brief or rather long, and I think the briefer they are, the better, notwithstanding that sometimes they should give people some guidance whatsoever, although they're not meant to be. Mandatory. So I think it's long enough, maybe too long for my taste. It lacks the tie to the agenda criteria, and I don't think that we should deliberately ask people, do you want us to do an interpretation? Because to my mind, that's what agenda decisions are all about. I mean, we ask people, are you happy with the agenda decision, or do you want us to do something else? That's with every agenda decision, that's what we ask.
Point taken.
So we don't have to do it again.
Laurence?
In response to Denise's question about the level of detail and listening to Scott, the only thing I can think maybe worthwhile adding is that we considered No, we concluded that there is no intangible asset to be recognized because the asset would be public listing, and this is not a recognizable intangible asset. We want to specify that.
I would agree.
Guido?
Yes, I agree with what Laurence has said, and I have to apologize to the staff because they already say in here that you recognize all identifiable net assets and only the excess of it goes through P&L. So that covers it. And maybe we could add then that the listing itself, from our point of view, is not an asset. Then the only addition I would like to make, and so I'm not in the same boat as Bernd, as I think we need to have a long agenda decision here, is I like the arguments of Laurence, and maybe the staff can look at it. I mean, yes, the legal acquiree doesn't issue shares, but shares are exchanged, also shares of the legal acquiree. And maybe that's, if that's the argument to be in IFRS 2, we should say that clear, that they say this is why we think it's in IFRS 2. And if we add those two things, then I can see that we can go for it. At the end of the day, then constituents will come back to us, and if they say, well, that's not sufficient, we need something else, and we can look at it at the next meeting.
With regard to referencing our criteria, it's always seemed to me that if we can reason from the standards to a conclusion, as we have here, mm-hmm. That is our criteria. Yeah. It would be unusual, given that we know there is diversity in practice, to say, for example, that we don't expect diversity in practice, because we know there is. But it does seem to me that, as I say, when we can reason from the standards to a conclusion that we believe is supportable, then we have satisfied our criteria for a rejection. Bernd, you're going to disagree with
me. Yeah, because I think then it's an interpretation. Because I either say the standard is clear and you must come up with this solution, and then there should be no diversity. If there is diversity, someone's doing it wrong. Or I interpret the standard in a certain way, then I acknowledge there is diversity. You can do it either way, but we say this is the right one. And then it's an interpretation.
We'll have to agree to disagree. This is the approach that I believe we've been instructed to take by the board. Andrew?
Well, I mean, isn't the logical consequence of what the analysis here that we wouldn't expect diversity going forward? I mean, why can't we say that? I mean, that is the logical consequence of where we got to, isn't it?
Yeah, and I would characterize this as being somewhere between those two examples that you gave, Bernd, because I'd say, look, you know, the committee has looked at this particular fact pattern, looked at the various literature available, and identified what it thinks is the appropriate accounting to such a satisfaction that it doesn't see another reasonable way of now applying the standards. So it's not saying that, no, there wasn't scope for sort of people to read it in different ways previously, but given this explanation, it sees just one way of now reading the standards.
I accept it's a borderline interpretation. Every one of these is. As I say, it seems to me self-serving to say now we've reached an answer, so we don't expect subsequent diversity. That seems like we're patting ourselves on the back a little bit, and I don't know that's necessary. But as to the length, I actually would have preferred a step-by-step, but I understand that would have been really a breaking with our usual. But there's so much emphasis on understanding the step-by-step to get to the answer.
Yeah, in fact, the reason why I mention it is because on the first draft of this tentative agenda decision, we came up with 2 pages of the tentative agenda decision. Because you need to explain the interaction between the two standards.
very clearly with paragraph 7.
Let me phrase it this way. Do I see any objection to going out with the interpretation? The Dr. Freud, call your office. Going out with the agenda decision as written, and let's see what happens. Any objection to that? Sandy?
No.
Oh, sorry, I'll still come back to my original suggestion, which was changing that second sentence in the first paragraph.
Yes, subject to there were
subject to a
couple
wording
of,
adjustments.
A couple of minor amendments. Yeah.
Is there any objection, subject to wording amendments developed during the conversation here, to issuing this agenda rejection? No. Well, let me put it this way. Denise, can you have them ready by tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we will circulate them and rediscuss it tomorrow. Okay, on that basis, yeah.